Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Melanie, and I'm reading the Big Bend Sentinel on November 12th, 2020. State Data Understates Coronavirus Threat in Alpine by Stephen Paulson. Alpine. Texas state data is not giving an accurate picture of coronavirus spread in Alpine, including active cases. At press time on Tuesday, the state's latest figures showed Brewster County with 37 active cases, but that number doesn't include all the cases found by Sul Ross State University. Brewster County's 37 active cases pale in comparison to Presidio County, where the state at press time had recorded 75 active cases. The growing numbers in Presidio have prompted policy and lifestyle effects, with some residents hunkering down and Marfa City Council on Tuesday renewing local mask rules and other coronavirus precautions. But the state count in Brewster County, including in Alpine alone, is likely significantly higher than the state's figures. Sul Ross State University, which has offered regular free testing to employees and students, at press time showed 93 confirmed cases among students and 7 in its faculty and staff for a total of 100 coronavirus cases. The university figure is around 3 times higher than the official tally for all of Brewster County and suggests that the state is undercounting local cases. But because of a quirk in how Texas counts cases at universities, few of those cases are showing up in local data. Dr. Ekta Escobar, the former health authority for Brewster County, explained some of these issues at an Alpine City Council meeting in September. The state tabulates cases based on the permanent residence for a patient, she said, and for many university students, that meant getting counted where their parents lived. Regardless, Escobar explained, many SRSU students lived in dorms, attended in-person classes, and otherwise interacted with people in Alpine. She argued it was important to count those cases in Alpine, where the infections were actually occurring. She cited this as one reason why local Brewster County figures were sometimes higher than the state. But faced with regular hostility and anger from people who oppose coronavirus restrictions, Dr. Escobar resigned in September, as the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported. And after witnessing Dr. Escobar's experience in the unpaid role, county officials say local doctors have so far been uninterested in replacing her. There are no takers, County Judge Eleazar Cano said at a commissioner's court meeting last month. Brewster County had been spoiled by Dr. Escobar, Cano said, and without her, the county was experiencing data issues that were typical for small counties. That has meant less detailed data on positivity rates and testing figures. It's also made it harder to parse out how many infections are coming from Sul Ross State University. Of the 100 SRSU linked cases, it's unclear at press time how many are in Alpine. Eric Zimmer, the city manager of Alpine, estimated that around 10 to 15% of the student body had permanent addresses in Brewster County and therefore would be counted locally as part of the state's total 37 active cases. Dean Wilkinson, a spokesperson for the university, said that most of the confirmed positive cases have been found through testing at the school, indicating that most of the 100 SRSU active cases are within reach of campus. But the school says some students are also self-reporting their cases, whether they're currently in Alpine or staying home for the semester. At press time, the Big Bend Sentinel was unable to definitively determine how many of the 93 active student cases were linked to students in Alpine. When asked about these figures, Michael Pacheco, an SRSU official helping to lead the school's coronavirus response, said that SRSU students living in other communities could also be included in the tracker, but he did not include a percentage or number. Asked what the school was going to do to share data with local officials in Alpine and Brewster County, Pacheco said school administrators routinely coordinate with local officials, but he did not comment. When asked whether the state was undercounting local numbers and whether this could be giving Alpine locals a false sense of security, stating that SRSU has no data which would be responsive to your request. Zimmer, the Alpine city manager, has lamented the lack of good local data since Escobar's departure. While Brewster County continues to search for another volunteer local health authority, Dr. Rachel Sonny, the administrator for Region 910 for the Texas Department of Health Services, is currently filling in. But Dr. Sonny, Zimmer said, has her hands a little bit full at the moment. Our regional health authority is based out of El Paso, which is one of the three or four hot spots in the nation right now, he said. Her attention and focus is on El Paso. Coronavirus live updates for the Big Bend region by Abby Perot and Stephen Paulson. Last updated November 11th, 5:39 p.m. Presidio County Judge Cinda Guevara announced 13 new cases, with 5 new cases in Presidio, 3 in Marfa, and 5 in Redford. In a release on Thursday, state officials announced that the dates of some upcoming Tri-County testing sites have been revised. The location and times for Alpine and Fort Davis testing sites are still the same, but the timing of the Presidio and Marfa testing sites have changed. Here's the updated information. Marfa, Tuesday, November 10th, the drive-thru, Presidio County Courthouse, 300 North Highland Street, Marfa, Texas. Presidio, Wednesday, November 11th. Walk-up, City of Presidio EMS and Fire Station, 100 East FM, 170 Presidio, Texas. Alpine, Thursday, November 12th. Walk-up, Alpine Fire Station, 102 South 2nd Street, Alpine, Texas. Fort Davis, Friday, November 13th, walk-up, Fort Davis Fire Station, 200 Court Avenue, Fort Davis, Texas. State officials are also now recommending that people pre-register at least 24 hours before the Marfa site at www.curative.com. All the sites will use oral swab tests and will run from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. or until capacity is reached. As usual, ID is required, but appointments aren't. From the governor, Texans are expected to wear a face covering over their nose and mouth when inside a commercial entity, building or space open to the public, and in outdoor spaces where maintaining 6 feet of distance from others is not possible. The latest testing data from the Texas Department of State Health Services, Presidio County, 203 positive, 77 active, 119 recovered, 7 deaths. Brewster County, 290 positive, 47 active, 238 recovered, 5 deaths. Jeff Davis County, 25 positive, 4 active, 21 recovered. At least 18,863 Texans have died from the virus. 985,380 have tested positive for COVID-19, and around 9 million tests have been conducted across the state. We are staying in regular contact with health authorities, schools, businesses, and other officials, and will update regularly with timestamps for time-sensitive updates. Nearby counties case counts: El Paso, 67,484, Hudspeth, 125, Culberson, 134, Reeves, 325, Pecos, 572, Crane, 90, Ector, 4,625, Midland, 6,213. Alpine's Art Walk, postponed until spring 2021, by Abby Perot. Alpine. Another long-standing event in the Big Bend has fallen casualty to coronavirus. The 27th annual Art Walk event in Alpine has been postponed, moving from late November to an undetermined date in spring 2021. We are saddened to have to make this decision. However, when we decided earlier this year to move forward with Art Walk 2020, we all said that there had to be a date to finalize moving forward or postponing the event, said John Davis, president of the board of Alpine's Gallery Night, Inc. Earlier this fall, the group had planned to go full steam ahead with a safe outdoor venue. Carrie Blackman, the founder and executive director, said in September, "With the schools reopening and COVID cases on the decline, we feel that by late November, we will be in a good position for this event," Blackman said at the time. But as late November soon approaches, cases in the Tri-County, the nearby cities, and across Texas are on the rise. This week, Texas hit an all-time high for new cases announced in a single day. And with that in mind, Art Walk plans were reconsidered. Usually, the annual event takes place in downtown Alpine, delighting visitors with exhibitions in the streets of town and in various galleries, shops, and restaurants along the way. Venues showcase art from locals and visiting artists alike. and many businesses in the area rely on the event as a strong source of annual revenue. The board had hoped that the event could continue this year with some masks and physical distancing, but when the directors gathered this fall, it was unanimously decided that the event would be postponed, with the directors citing a few reasons for their decision to delay. The board of directors first reviewed the information on rising cases of COVID-19 that are being reported in metro areas surrounding the Big Bend, pointing to El Paso and Midland-Odessa cases as an influence for holding off on the 2020 event. But another reason the group considered was the event draws around 9,000 attendees yearly, and the board felt it was too risky to bring visitors to Alpine, saying in a press release, "Our main concern is the health of our community." While dates have not been nailed down for 2021, in the meantime, Blackman is reaching out to art and food vendors to return their fees at this time. A network of Big Bend dog rescuers want every tale to have a happy ending. By Abby Perot, Far West, Texas. When Sergio Carrasco took the job of animal control officer at the city of Presidio nearly 4 years ago, he wasn't sure if it was right for him. "I like animals myself, and I don't like euthanizing," Carrasco said. "I wasn't sure if I'd be able to do this job. It's easy to euthanize across the board and say, hey, it's a Monday through Friday job, but I'm not that way." But with his wife currently residing in Ojinaga, he wanted to work near the border to help her emigrate. So he decided to give animal control a chance. At the time, the number of stray and abandoned dogs was daunting. Heather Hall, a Terlingua resident, said, "At the very beginning of 2019, my friend Lori Benavides took me to the Presidio shelter. Her friend had ties to the Presidio community and was really discouraged by the disparity between the advocacy that was happening in Alpine. Hall first came to the Big Bend area in 1996 as an AmeriCorps volunteer, but it wasn't until years later she officially came to call Terlingua her home. And it was another decade until she became acquainted with Carrasco at the Presidio Animal Shelter. After seeing the shelter, it took Hall only 48 hours to relocate a Great Pyrenees and a pug into warm, loving homes. I made a little resolution that I'd try to help every animal in that shelter in that year," Hall said, "and basically we did. She began rehoming dogs and a few cats from Presidio, the Big Bend Parks, Terlingua, and even a couple of pooches that emigrated from Mexico's Boquillas and Santa Elena. Once Hall arrived, Carrasco knew that he couldn't go back to the status quo. While the city of Presidio pays for his salary and the cost of dog and cat food, Carrasco said he avoids adding any other expenses for fear they'd be cut from the city budget during slim times. Instead, he's worked with Hall to get more resources from donors. Hall started the Underground Dog, a rescue that raises funds to vaccinate local dogs and rescue them from a death sentence in kill shelters. With the help of Carrasco administering the shots, every dog in the Presidio shelter now gets vaccinated. And last year, no dog in the Presidio shelter that could be safely handled by a human was euthanized. Carrasco said if Hall tells him a dog needs a late pickup from the vet or a ride to another town to meet their foster, he'll do it, because that just means one more animal will get saved or can be helped. And Hall said she couldn't do it without Carrasco either. "I could probably move 5 dogs from Presidio if it wasn't for Sergio. He vaccinates every single one that comes through." All of the effort and care from the duo leads to success stories like Canelo, a pit bull surrendered to the shelter in Presidio. Canelo, the pit bull, I don't think he knew he was a pit bull, and he was so nice and friendly. "This one was special, at least for me," said Carrasco. After arriving at the shelter, Canelo was in poor shape with bald patches and scabs, but nevertheless sweet. After vaccines, treatment, and a full recovery, Canelo found a forever home in the Pacific Northwest, thanks to Hall's growing network to move dogs out of Presidio and into eager adopters' homes. Canelo was one lucky dog, but since the pipeline of dogs moving north from the Big Bend has been established, Canelo is only one of more than 150 dogs at that one tail at a time. A Portland-based rescue has been able to adopt out. Hall now organizes transports for dogs that aren't finding homes in Presidio. Carrasco goes out of his way to do more than house and feed the strays that end up at the local shelter. On a Friday in late October, he was set to meet Hall between Presidio and Terlingua to hand off a dog. While the pup had a flight booked to Portland in November, it needed to stay with the foster until then. so that Costco could free up room in the shelter and get the dog prepared for its trek north. Finding temporary fosters for dogs is one of the largest challenges Marilyn McGee finds in her attempts to save Big Bend dogs. McGee has been running Jethro Homeward Bound Pets, her fly-by-night dog rescue, for 8 years. Living in Fort Davis and working in Alpine, she helps dogs in both communities and does her best to pull dogs from a high kill rate shelter in Fort Stockton. It's like sipping off a fire hose to be in rescue around here. McGee works with other groups like Hall's The Underground Dog, the Alpine Humane Society, Grand Companions, and others in Fort Stockton and Marathon to form a patchwork network of animal rescues across the region. Her own organization has transported nearly 500 dogs a year in the past few years alone. Jethro, rhymes with death row, is more targeted in helping the shelter not get full and not get to the point of euthanizing to make space, McGee said. She has leveraged social media to share photos of dogs who are running out of time, find adopters and fosterers, and help dogs hitchhike their way to other cities where permanent or temporary homes await them. Often, dogs just need someone to be the bridge between the shelter and their permanent homes. While dogs can be transported to the Midwest or Northwest to find homes, usually the car or plane taking them is not immediately available. If a kill shelter dog has 24 hours before euthanization and a 2-week wait before their plane trip to Oregon, a foster is the only way to keep the dog alive in the meantime. Hall said Presidio dogs listed on the Portland Rescue site regularly get 50 applications. The maximum number of applications OTAT will accept from people eager to adopt them. The challenge is taking care of those dogs until they can get to the homes that want them. Even so, moving dogs north from Texas isn't the ultimate ideal outcome. Transportation is stressful for the animals and costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to immunize, fix, and transport them safely. We're eating costs left and right here, McGee said. I can't really tell you why we do this. It's definitely a money-sucking, time-sucking thing to do. Despite that, it's just something I wake up and do. I can't look away now that I've seen it. But as it stands, it's much easier to move the dogs across the country than to find homes locally. It's hard to be a dog owner here, said Hall. I didn't realize it much until I started looking at what was in Portland. Dog parks in the Big Bend aren't as fancy, she pointed out, and you could be 100 miles from the vet easily. Getting a dog in Presidio vaccinated and fixed means multiple hours, long trips to and from the vets in Fort Davis, Alpine, or to Lingua. And if the animal falls ill, Hall said, you have to think twice about when it's enough of an emergency to make the long hours trek. For the shelter dogs without owners, Hall said they have it rough. The dogs in Presidio are really exposed to a lot of the raw elements. They come in a lot sicker than the dogs in Alpine. It's a double whammy. Not only do they need a vet more, they're further away. Ticks are worse there, and predation is worse there. It's a tough place to be a human, said Hall. We all go without a bit being out here, but the dogs go without a lot of the time. Hall does think there is a way to overcome the multiplying number of stray and shelter dogs and get ahead of it. Spaying and neutering animals is the way to go. If you facilitated that, then you would see a rapid decline in the number of pets there. But you need to facilitate it. You need a mobile vet clinic that drives up to people's houses and that costs nothing. But with the help of transporters, fosterers, and rescuers, adoption successes are extending through the Big Bend and beyond. In 2018, Texas was the state with the highest number of shelter pets euthanized, but since, its life-saving rate has improved by 15%, according to Best Friends Animal Society, a group set on reaching no-kill status in the United States by 2025. There's people in Marfa who might have been reluctant to do something like this, but I think there's at least one Heather in every community who might be willing to think about this stuff, Hall said. I hope somebody thinks this is doable. In Marfa, George Gonzalez, the animal control officer, said they try to avoid euthanizations and usually end up resorting to it when the shelter fills with very old dogs. Last week, the officer had to collect 20 dogs from a small trailer in town. We're trying to adopt them out, he said, and at least two have already found homes. In 2018, Presidio had 101 dogs enter its shelter and only 69 were saved, according to BFAS. But this year, Carrasco says he's had to euthanize only two dogs thanks to the help of Heather and other shelter volunteers. Across organizations, there are many ways to pitch in to help the domesticated four-legged residents of the region. Most rescues and shelters here accept donations of food, supplies, and financial contributions. Many urge pet owners to spay or neuter their pets and encourage their fellow pet owners to do the same. And for those without funds or time to donate, a simple share of information on social media goes a long way, according to McGee. Hall said, "I hope that Presidio is a model. Even if you don't have a humane society and an endowment, and you're in an impoverished community with six kennels in a shed. In Presidio, those who want to talk about what can be done or to donate can call 432-556-5010. And in Marfa, Gonzalez said donations can be made at City Hall to the animal shelter. For Jethro Homeward Bound Pets, the biggest thing, according to McGee, is finding fosters, then maybe getting money, and then finding transports. If we can't find the fosters, we can't get them out in the first place." The Blessings of the Mystery, Carolina Sayedo and David De Rosas at Ballroom Marfa. Marfa. Ballroom Marfa will present The Blessings of the Mystery, an exhibition beginning on January 2021. Artist Carolina Sayedo and David De Rosas have created a new film and series of installations rooted in West Texas, and the project crystallizes the artist's extended research into the connections and tensions between the cultural, scientific, industrial, and socio-political forces of three key locations: the McDonald Observatory in Fort Davis, the Amistad Dam on the Rio Grande, and the Permian Basin oil fields. The multidisciplinary exhibition centers around the teachings of The Hands, a single-channel cinematic journey across the region's complex histories of colonization, migration, and ecological precarity. The video installation combines observational and experimental documentary with oral histories, reenactments, archival research, and found footage. The film's storylines grow out of the land where both indigenous and settler knowledge have been historically produced. The film's concepts, locations, and objects are encountered in the galleries where installations, collages, and drawings expand on these layered ideas, allowing the viewers to physically experience the film's storylines in multiple ways. Additionally, the exhibition includes original 1930s watercolors by Forrest and Lula Kirkland, which record the ancient indigenous rock art of the Lower Pecos on loan from the Texas Archaeological Research Laboratory at the University of Texas. The Blessings of the Mystery is an extension of Sayedo's and De Rosa's multidisciplinary practice centered around environmental issues, encounters between history and memory, indigenous rights, and other cosmologies. With their exhibition at Ballroom Marfa, Sayedo and De Rosa's investigate the transformation of the Trans-Pecos way of industry, infrastructure, and private property. Sayedo is a multidisciplinary artist known for her performances, video, artist books, sculptures, and installations that examine environmental and social issues. And De Rosas is a multidisciplinary artist and award-winning filmmaker whose practice merges experimental, documentary, and contemporary art forms, revisiting and relocating the politics of memory. The exhibition is organized by Ballroom Marfa curator at large Laura Copeland, with curatorial assistant Gabriella Carballo. It will run from January 30th to May 28th of next year, with the spring celebration on Saturday, April 24th, 2021. The exhibition will travel to the Visual Arts Center College of Fine Arts at the University of Texas at Austin, organized by Mackenzie Stevens and Rubin Center for the Visual Arts, the University of Texas at El Paso, organized by Carrie Doyle. Lead support is provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and the VIA Art Fund. Major support is provided by the Philip and Muriel Berman Foundation and Kevin Sherman. Generous support is provided by the City of Marfa and the Texas Commission of the Arts. Exhibitions at Ballroom Marfa are supported by the Brown Foundation, Inc., Fairfax Dorn, and Mark Limcher, Virginia Lieberman and Family, Lieberman Foundation, Ballroom Marfa Board of Trustees, International Surf Club, and members.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, November 5th. Republicans Have Strong Showing in County by Nathan Hewer. It was nearly a complete sweep for the Republican Party on the Pecos County ballots on Election Day, November 3rd, although results are still technically unofficial as of November 4th, a majority of races were won decisively. Of the 16 party-related contested seats on the Pecos County ballot, only one had more Democratic votes than their Republican opponent. Democrat Salvador Sal Rangel edged Republican Jose Munoz, 1836 to 1818, for Constable of Precinct 1. Munoz had a 1,525 to 1,515 lead when early votes were tallied before losing by a narrow margin after final votes were counted from across the county. In the State Representative District 74 race, Republican Ruben Falcón easily won the Pecos County vote over Democrat Eddie Morales, 3,147 to 1,413. But the advantage was not ultimately enough for the Fort Stockton City Council member to come away with a victory. Morales won the overall vote 25,832, 54.1% to 21,918, 45.9%. Falcón posted to his campaign's Facebook page on Wednesday morning, "Well, friends, we lost. We won everywhere except our opponent's hometown of Eagle Pass, and that got him over the top," Falcón said. "Thank you all that gave me your support and your vote. I have enjoyed getting to know you." On the bright side, Texas stayed red. At the national level, Texas voted in favor of President Donald Trump 52.26% and Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate John Cornyn 53.71%. At the state level, state Senate races are nearly even as of press time on November 4th. Republicans have claimed 8 seats. Democrats have claimed 7 with one yet to be decided in District 19 between Republican Peter Flores and Democrat Roland Gutierrez. As of November 4th at 2 p.m., Gutierrez had a 32% lead, 49.86% to 46.57%, with 84.39% of the votes tallied. Gonzalez and Heffelfinger received notable Toastmasters award and salute. Toastmasters is delighted to recognize Karen Heffelfinger and Oscar Gonzalez as distinguished Toastmasters. Their outstanding achievement will serve as an inspiration to all Toastmasters. The award is the greatest honor that can be earned by a member of Toastmasters International. The DTM award is given only to those who have demonstrated outstanding leadership and communication skills and who have used these skills to help others in their self-development efforts. Attaining this award was not an easy task. You have to complete both the leadership and communication tracks, earning many awards to reach DTM status. These accomplishments have given you a greater perspective of the value of being a good communicator and an effective leader. The individuals have assisted their club, district, and community. More than 4 million people have benefited from our programs since the organization's establishment in 1924. Karen's and Oscar's accomplishments and continuing contributions were a significant factor in the success. In the 27 years of being Toastmasters Club in Fort Stockton, Karen and Oscar are only the second and third individual to receive this award. Petra Ramos was the first to receive the award. FSISD Super gives update on school numbers by Nathan Hewer. Fort Stockton Independent School District Superintendent Ralph Trainum gave an update on student attendance numbers and COVID-19 related numbers involving the school district staff and students on Thursday, October 29th, at the regular FSISD meeting. The school district saw its highest number of students attend classes on campuses this month at 1,363 students, out of 2,295 students enrolled in the district, out of all the schools combined. Trainum noted the enrollment number is 153 less students than in October of 2019. There was a report run by the school district the week before the meeting, which showed 179 no-shows. After administrators and staff tracked down a majority of the students, there were only 20 no-shows as of October 29th. Trainum also reported on COVID-19 numbers in the school district, stating there was 1 to 2 staff members currently on the COVID-19 list and 4 students who were added to the list from October 26th through October 29th, totaling 15 students since the beginning of the school year. COVID-19. Death toll continues to rise in county, by Nathan Hewer. The death toll continued to slowly rise in Pecos County over the past 7 days. 5 additional COVID-19 deaths occurred in the county from October 27th to November 3rd. The deaths included a 75-year-old female who was a resident of Focused Care Nursing Home in Fort Stockton, a 78-year-old female, an 80-year-old male, an 80-year-old female who was a resident at FCNH, and a 90-year-old female who was also a resident at FCNH. All 5 individuals contracted the virus from confirmed cases. The total number of deaths in Pecos County is now at 18 since the start of the pandemic. The number of deaths has risen from 6 people to 18 people over the last 3 weeks. Active case numbers in the county as of November 3rd are at 64, the same number as last week. The total number of infections has slowed down from the week prior as 32 individuals tested positive over the last 7 days. Of the 32 positive tests of this past week, a 1-year-old tested positive, the youngest since the start of the pandemic. As of November 3rd, there are 39 tests pending and a total of 427 positive cases in the county since the start of the pandemic. A total of 2,613 people have been tested, and 2,054 of those tests have come back negative, 78%. Pecos County People. Student Learns Management Skills in the Classroom and on the Job, by Rebecca Bell. Less than a year ago, after 6 months working at the subway at 2005 West Dickinson Boulevard in Fort Stockton, 18-year-old Edgar Tavares received a promotion to shift manager. The 2020 Fort Stockton High School graduate attributes one reason for his on-the-job success to his Midland College business management classes. "I signed up for dual enrollment courses in high school, and a business class was one of the options," Tavares explained. "I had never been all that interested in business, but the schedule was convenient, so I thought to myself, why not give it a shot?" Tavares said that he immediately enjoyed the class and the instructor, Anita Schellenberger. Miss Schellenberger wasn't just a teacher. She really explained things and wanted to help us, he said. "When we covered business ownership and entrepreneurship, I became very interested. The class inspired me to take more business management classes. My goal is to have my own business one day. I really like the idea of building a business from scratch, something where I can be in control of my own destiny." Tavares took additional business and management classes at the Midland College Williams Regional Technical Training Center in Fort Stockton. And by the time he graduated from high school, this past May, he received a certificate in business management from Midland College. Tavares is sticking with his studies at the WRTTC and is working toward an associate degree in business management. He also continues to manage the 3 to 9 p.m. shift at the subway, working 25 to 35 hours a week. "I'm able to apply a great deal of what I am learning my responsibilities at Subway," Tavares said. "My classes have helped me deal with people and have given me organizational skills." Tavares noted that recently, due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the decline in the economy, Subway had to cut hours for some of the workers. It was his responsibility to tell the employees in his shift. "That was tough," Tavares said. "I relied on some of the principles that Ms. Schellenberger had explained in my classes about being transparent and explaining the situation. I hated doing it, but I realized that it's something a manager has to do occasionally." Tavares is the son of Olga and Arnaldo Tavares. He has two siblings, an older sister also named Olga, who is 20, and a younger brother named Diego, who is 8. Edgar Tavares and his sister Olga are the first people in their family to attend college. Olga is attending the Art Institute of Austin and majoring in graphic design. "Currently, because of the pandemic, my sister is staying at home and taking online courses," Tavares said. "It's nice having the whole family together again." Tavares is very close to his family. In fact, he stated that when he does start his own business, he wants to stay in the West Texas region so that he can be near his family. His father, Arnaldo, works in the oil and gas industry. In his spare time, Tavares enjoys watching football. His favorite team is the Dallas Cowboys. He also plays the saxophone, a talent he learned as a member of the Fort Stockton High School band. Horsehead Crossing Celebration, a huge success. Pecos County Historical Commission, PCHC, members and volunteers enjoyed outstanding participation and support at the recent two-day celebration on October 30th through the 31st at historic Horsehead Crossing on the Pecos River. Reenactors and artillery batteries from Fort Stockton, Waco, Midland, and Brownwood were on hand to lend an air of authenticity to the weekend, while 7 chuck wagon crews served all comers some real cowboy chow. The event was held to commemorate the various historical figures who passed over this well-known crossing throughout the 16th through the 19th centuries, including the Comanche War Trail, the Emigrant Trail, the Butterfield Overland Stage, and the Goodnight Loving Trail, which was made famous by Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove. I still argue that Horsehead Crossing is the second most iconic landmark in Texas history, next only to the Alamo, Pecos County Historical Commission Secretary Kirby Warnock said. This spot has seen the Butterfield Overland Mail, the wagon trains headed to California, and the first cattle drive pass over this ground. Historian Tom Ashmore gave an outstanding presentation on the history of the site, and efforts to locate the Butterfield Overland Stagecoach stop that was washed away by flooding. PCHC President Ernest Woodward kept things moving along at a good clip, while historian Jim Collette read the names and bios of recently deceased PCHC members that included Margaret Hayter Newton, Kelly Templeton, John Mack Carpenter, Sixie Joe Davis, and Evans Turpin. A cannon salute was fired in their honor. Special thanks to Pecos County Commissioner Santiago Cantu and Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster for their support in preparing the road and venue for the event. Horsehead Crossing is located on the Pecos River off of Farm to Market 11 between the communities of Imperial and Girvan. A large metal sign on Farm to Market 11 will direct you to the site. Do Something, your guide to local places to go and things to do. Friday, December 4th, the Season of Hope 2020 Christmas Parade will be held on Friday, December 4th at 6:30 p.m. Parade lineup begins at 5:30 p.m. on Rio Street. Contact the chamber after 10 a.m. Friday, December 4th to get your assigned lineup spot. Assignments are subject to change. Check in at lineup to confirm. Please visit www.fortstockton.org/events to see COVID-19 guidelines and restrictions for the event.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, November 5th. Trump, Cornyn, Gonzalez take Ward County Tuesday. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. President Donald Trump, John Cornyn, and Tony Gonzalez carried Ward County by wide margins in Tuesday's general election. 65% of the county's 6,272 registered voters cast ballots. Trump garnered 3,238 votes, 80%, to outdistance former Vice President Joe Biden, who received 261. Senator John Cornyn received 3,136 votes against challenger Mary M.J. Hager, who received 723 votes. Tony Gonzalez, in his bid for U.S. Representative in District 23, garnered 3,035 votes, outdistancing Gina Ortiz Jones' count of 833. As of press time on Wednesday, Trump was the winner in Texas with 52% of the state's 11 million voters. Biden, however, held the electoral vote lead with 238 to 213. Results from Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Alaska were still pending, with Trump leading in Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Alaska. To win the presidency, 270 electoral votes are required. Statewide, Cornyn will hold his Senate seat for another 6 years, as he was declared the winner with 94% of precincts reporting. Hager had presented a strong challenge, but her bid fell short, with Cornyn receiving 53% of the 11 million votes cast. The battle for the 23rd Congressional District of Texas was hotly contested between Gonzalez and Jones. Gonzalez won the seat, vacated by Will Hurd, in a close race. With 97% of precincts reporting, Gonzalez had outdistanced Ortiz with 50.7% to 46.5% for Jones. Beto Filela picked up the remaining 2.8%. There were no locally contested races. COVID cases rising in county. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The number of active COVID-19 cases in Ward County is creeping up, with 13 confirmed cases and 14 probable as of Tuesday afternoon. There has been a total of 179 confirmed cases, 163 recovered, and 3 deaths. Probable cases are 93, with 78 recovered and 1 death. Since tracking began in March, 1,253 tests have been administered, with 70 pending, 39 of which were administered at the Ward Memorial Hospital Health Fair on Monday evening. County Judge Greg Holly said on Tuesday afternoon, quote, "The numbers are up a bit as the weekend cases hit the county reports. We also know that there have been new cases in connection with the schools. Grand Falls has closed school for today as contacts are made for a confirmed case there." End quote. And a message to the community, GRISD Superintendent Brett Starkweather said the school would reopen for face-to-face instruction on Wednesday. Statewide, there are 105,000 active cases. Total cases are 909,000, with 787,000 recovered and 18,000 deaths. SFC extends hours beginning this week. To better serve the community's health care needs, Ward Memorial Hospital has announced that the Sandhills Family Clinic is expanding their hours beginning in November. In addition, the Sandhills Family Clinic East will offer 4 Sunday clinics through December. Quote, "We are thrilled to better serve the needs of our community when healthcare services are more important than ever," said Leticia C. Rodriguez, CEO of Ward Memorial Hospital. Continuing the quote, We are committed to the health and safety of our patients, and we have taken the steps needed so we can provide the healthcare services our community depends on." End quote. According to Rodriguez, the hospital and clinics are following the important Texas and CDC guidelines to make visits to hospital, clinics, and emergency rooms safe. At the two clinics, patients can find care for a variety of common conditions. Common services include treatment for allergies, asthma, diabetes, gynecological exams, hypertension, and infectious diseases. Both clinics provide family practice, internal medicine, DOT physical exams, preventive care, care for minor emergencies, and more. The Sand Hills Family Clinic and Sand Hills Family Clinic East are staffed by a team of physicians, physician assistants, and nurse practitioners. Appointments can be scheduled for preventive care services such as immunizations, wellness exams, annual physicals, and various screenings. Patients can save on medical bills by skipping the emergency room and visiting the clinic instead for minor injuries and illnesses. Flu shots are now available at the clinics. With two dangerous viruses circulating this year, health officials are urging everyone to get a flu shot. Rodriguez said that it is important not to delay healthcare services, even routine screenings and checkups with your provider. Quote, "Delaying the care you need can put your health at risk," she said. "It is more important than ever to ensure that you are in good health. Whether it is a routine cholesterol check to determine your risk of heart disease or treatment for an injury, your health depends on getting the medical care you need when you need it." End quote. The new clinic hours are Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Sunday clinics will be open on November 8th and 22nd, December 6th and 13th. To learn more about local health care services, including medical providers, or to schedule an appointment, call the Sand Hills Family Clinic at 432-943-2058 or the Sand Hills Family Clinic East at 432-943-2057. Vasquez gets 4 years in prison. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. An Odessa woman was sentenced to 4 years in a Texas Department of Criminal Justice facility after failing to meet the requirements of her probation last week. 143rd Judicial District Court Judge Mike Swanson ordered Vanessa Ann Vasquez, age 32, to 4 years in prison after she was placed on probation for intentionally possessing methamphetamine, a second-degree felony, in 2017. Vasquez was indicted by the grand jury of the 143rd Judicial District Court in December 2018. Vasquez was granted bail for the 2017 felony charge, but failed to meet the requirements of her probation by not paying all of her $3,888 fine, continuing to possess, use, or sell any type of alcohol or controlled substance, and by not remaining in the supervising county. Based on the indictment on March 3, 2017, Vasquez did intentionally and knowingly possess a controlled substance, namely methamphetamine, in an amount of 4 grams or more, but less than 200 grams. Vasquez was further ordered to pay $318 in court costs and $180 in restitution to the DPS Restitution Accounting Office in Austin. She was also given credit for 86 days toward her sentence and a sentence reduction of 1 year for accepting responsibility to the matter. Trent Graham represented Vasquez, and Randall W. Reynolds served as attorney for the state on the case. New Mexico man dies in Sunday crash. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Around 6:20 a.m. Sunday, November 1st, Ward County Sheriff's deputies, Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department, and Texas Department of Public Safety officers responded to State Highway 115, 7 miles north of Piute, regarding a call of a head-on crash with one person trapped under the vehicle. According to the initial report by Texas Department of Public Safety, Andres Garcia, age 76, of Hobbs, New Mexico, was traveling south on State Highway 115 in a 2019 GMC Sierra, while Dominique D. Jackson, age 32, of Cypress, was traveling north on State Highway 115, driving a 2019 Dodge Ram pickup towing a trailer. For unknown reasons, Garcia crossed the center stripe and entered the northbound lane, driving on the wrong side of the road, striking Jackson head-on. Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department was dispatched to the scene to free both drivers from the vehicles. Quote, "One of the extractions was a little more complicated than the other, but we were able to extract both drivers within 10 to 15 minutes," Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department Chief Eddie Nelms said. Garcia was pronounced dead at the scene by Ward County Justice of the Peace Elizabeth Polanco. The report noted that both drivers were wearing seat belts and weather condition was clear and dry at the time of the crash. Jackson suffered non-incapacitating injuries and was transported to Ward Memorial Hospital. The crash is still under investigation by Trooper Daniel Leyva, DPS Monahans, and was assisted by Trooper Arnulfo Rivas of DPS Pecos.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.